Balance your trading strategy by adding futures. CME Group helps you manage risk and capture opportunities in all market environments. Capitalize on around-the-clock access to highly liquid global futures and options market across all major asset classes. Just visit your online broker and get started. Plug into valuable educational materials and trading tools and see what adding futures can do for you at cmegroup.com/onthetape. Welcome back, Swizz. Monday, the 22nd of April, 1 p.m. on the East Coast Market Call. Dan Nathan and yours truly back from Ireland, which I will tell you exceeded all expectations. I loved it, loved the people, loved the landscape. It was a wonderful trip, Dan.
Well, Guy, you leave for a week and all hell breaks loose. I mean, literally the shit hit the fan. You know, I mean, everything. It just kept on, you know, going and going and going. And it was really a lot of the stuff that you were talking about. I mean, yields firmed up. The dollar seemed pretty firm. Gold is pretty firm. Lots of cross currents also. Crude oil came in a little bit. I think that had to do a little bit with the, you know, the geopolitical dying down a little bit. But again, it was an interesting week in the markets, and you were over there drinking pint after pint of Guinness beer.
No, that's not. You should
not. No, really. Yeah, no, it didn't happen.
No.
But let's
all good. I mean, I enjoyed it. It was definitely a fun trip. But yes, a lot happened. And when you're, it's funny, when you're not on top of it every second like we typically are, you get a different perspective. And I think it actually is important to take a break every once in a while. Well,
all right. So what was some of that perspective?
Well, this is my biggest takeaway. Obviously, a lot, you know, the geopolitical stuff reared its ugly head a couple different times last week. And historically, when I say historically, as long as I can remember, the market would have there would have been a rush to quality in the form of the United States bond market, which should have made yields go down significantly lower, especially given the run that yields have had. Obviously, yields have gone up in a pretty dramatic way. So when all that stuff happened, one would have thought yields would have come in dramatically. That didn't happen. They held in there. And then when things cooled, they continued to sort of move higher. So in my opinion, the bond market sort of showed its, I think it's been showing its hand, but I think it clearly showed its hand last week when in times of strife, you would have seen yields go down in a meaningful way. That didn't happen. Now, the market is what it is, but the bond market to me is what people should be focused on. So that was one of my bigger takeaways.
All right. So let me ask you this. So there's a bunch of, there is a bunch of bond issuance this week, right? I think there are 2.57s, that sort of thing. You've been saying this pretty steadfast that basically, you know, buyers are going to demand higher yields, right? And so, you know, so you've been talking about this potential for a, you know, flight to quality in the times of geopolitics. You just kind of went over that a little bit, but you also have lots of issuance here. So my question to you is that the stock market sold off last week. Did it have much to do with yields, Guy? Or is it, so, you know what I mean? Like to me, is it just kind of some repositioning in front of earnings? And we're going to hit a bunch of that today. I'm just curious, like, what do you think the stock market is keying off right now? Is it really about U.S. corporate earnings and valuations? Or is it about bond yields 4.6 on their way to 5%?
Yeah. Well, I mean, as you know, typically the answer to questions like that are some amalgam of the two. But the answer correctly, you have to say which is really the driving force. And personally, I do think it is yields. I'm not saying I'm right, but that's the way I look at it. I think the market was anticipating yields to go much lower. Obviously, all these Fed rate hikes that the market was pricing in the fall of last year are not going to come to fruition. So I think to a large extent, it was the bond market. But I also think if you want to sort of layer a couple things on top, technicals started to finally matter. And we've talked about March 8th a dozen times since March 8th and the importance of that day in terms of what we saw technically to a couple different stocks. On top of that list, obviously, NVIDIA. And we said at the time, you're going to come back a month, 2 months from now, at that day, that was a Friday, and say, this was a really interesting day. And now, for a week or so, NVIDIA treaded water. It actually challenged that prior high, but it never made it. And you go back again and look at that March 8th date, and that sticks out, as they say, like a sore thumb. So you're getting some consolidation here. It makes sense. I still think there's another leg to the downside here, and I will continue to come back to that date. But to specifically answer your question, I think it is about yields, and we'll see if earnings can hold up. Because if earnings don't come through in this interest rate environment, I think there's going to be more trouble ahead.
Yep. All right. Let's go to the rundown here. So a big week for earnings, as Guy mentioned. And again, you know, NVIDIA is a company that doesn't report until late May, but a lot of their biggest customers are going to report in the next week or so. Those customers are Google, they're Meta, they're Amazon. And so what they have to say about CapEx and how they're spending on generative AI is really going to affect NVIDIA a little bit. And so again, if you're long of these stocks, it makes some sense to be okay with that sort of sell-off. I mean, it didn't feel great, down 10%. In one day on Friday, and this morning it opened up 3%. It was flat at one point. So, you know, again, if their customers don't support the very, very bullish view for the balance of the year, and then basically, you know, people are already starting to talk about 2025, then you're going to have a further sell-off, which brings us to the NASDAQ. You know, one, if you look at the NASDAQ futures, the NASDAQ 100 futures here, I mean, they sliced through, Guy, last week, the 50 and the 100 day. Do we hear the 200 day? And you and I will spend some time on that. And then we're going to talk a little bit about that dollar strength and what that means for other risk assets. Let's go to the NASDAQ 100 chart again here, Guy. So while you were gone, I mean, look at that precipitous drop, right? We could have made the case that the relative strength in the NASDAQ 100 futures was something that was pretty bullish. But when it went through that 50 day, it got right to its 100 day. You see that rising 200 day moving average, that little kind of support zone that we kind of highlight there is that breakout level from December, okay? And that was when, again, you just mentioned this before, 6 rate cuts were expected at that point for this year. We might be lucky to get 1 or 2. Maybe there's none. Thoughts here on the NASDAQ 100 futures?
Well, you can finally see the 50-day for the first time in a while is starting to roll over. So it's definitely flattening. I look at it and say, okay, it's starting to turn lower. That's one thing to keep into consideration. We sliced through it, as you said. The 100-day didn't hold, but we'll probably sort of go sideways here. But you know, if we can go and do a real-time chart, I mean, you can draw the trend line from the November low. And we've been saying for a while that given the steepness of the line, of the uptrend line, if the market traded sideways for a period of time, it would break the uptrend in a natural way. And that's exactly what has happened. And here's the line. You draw it however you, I would go do those other lows. I would draw it against those. But you'll see what I mean in a second. I mean, the trend line is what it, right. There you go. So over time, we had that trend line. We held, we went sideways for a while. That sideways action caused us to break it. That break caused a significant down move. That's the way I look at this. And it makes a lot of sense. We actually spoke about that price action pretty much precisely. Now, what does it tell you? I do think the 200 days in play here. And I think we'll probably go sideways for a period of time and then take a look at it. And the last time we did in a meaningful way was, I think, in November of last year. So here we are. And that's how I sort of read this entire thing.
Yeah. And I guess what's most important to me, why we started with the NASDAQ 100 e-mini futures, is that, you know, we know that Apple has been a weak performer, one of the largest market cap companies in that index of 100 stocks. We know that Tesla has been very weak, right? So Tesla's down more than 40% on the year already. There's the Apple. It was, I think it might've made a fresh intraday new 52-week low. So that thing's down about 15% or a little more from its all-time highs, 52-week highs there. So ultimately you get a day like last week where Netflix and everybody was really excited about the potential for Netflix to get back towards that prior 2021 all-time high, Guy, and you know, the way in which that thing had come back, if you just think about, you know, how poor the sentiment was at its lows about 2 years ago and how good it is right now, to have that stock close down nearly 10% last week after a quarter that looked pretty good, the guidance wasn't bad. If you're telling me that the change of reporting next year, they're not going to give certain subscriber metrics and the like, that was the reason to keep selling it. I mean, I thought that was kind of goofy, but here you are, that $500 level, you could draw that horizontal line, that breakout from the January quarter. I mean, it's kind of going back there, and that's going to be lining up with that 200-day moving average a little bit. And so, again, you know your buy level right there if you want to kind of take a shot at it. But to me, I think it's probably in no man's land until it kind of really gets oversold and tests that support.
So do a longer-term chart of Netflix, and you see that prior high. And, you know, if you watch Fast Money, you'll know for a while I've been saying, look, I think this thing is going to levitate into earnings. I thought it would actually give a run at that prior all-time high, which if you go back and look, I want to say it was late. Someone is that? Yeah.
$700 or something like
that. Yeah, there you go. There's the high. You see the date. So that's what I thought we'd get to. We obviously didn't. But I thought the trade was to own it in earnings and pull the ripcord right ahead. And that was right, except the level didn't hold up. But here you are. Now, what do you have? Well, you still have that gap to the downside, as you sort of highlighted. All those gaps that were created when we dropped precipitously have been filled. But now you have that sort of one remaining gap that needs to be filled, I think, probably around, you know, 505, 510. And I think that, as you said, Dan, will line up with the 200-day moving average. I think that's when you dip your toe again. But at this point, I think you're right. It's sort of no man's land.
Yeah, I think at 500, it actually looks really interesting to me, especially like I didn't see downward earnings revisions, guy. You know what I mean? On that quarter, people just didn't like the change in reporting. And there's a couple things that we've talked about. I know we spent some time on Fast Money about a month ago talking about like their move into live. The other night we highlighted the fact that they have this Tyson fight, this Logan Paul fight in July. This is like new for them. This is interesting stuff, in my opinion. It's one of the first big program shifts that I can see since they went into like a lot of that kind of dramatic, you know, they do a lot of documentaries. They do a lot of original content. So I think this is kind of an interesting shift. I think the last thing you want to do is see them paying billions and billions of dollars for rights, for sports rights and that sort of thing. But if they can around the edges do some really unique programming, you know, on the live front, that is interesting to me. I want to take you to the S&P 500 futures here, because as we just highlighted, okay, that, you know, the NASDAQ 100 sliced, as we said, through the 50 and the 100. Look at where the S&P found some support, right at that 100-day moving average. You see that 200-day is also at that kind of December breakout level or so. So again, this comes down to earnings this week. Let's let them flash up really quickly, you know, that earnings calendar a little bit, because it's a wide swath. It's not just mega cap tech here, guy. Are there any names that you're really going to be keying off of this week that are going to give you a sense of like the broader economy, not just the tech economy or not just the generative AI spend economy?
Yeah, UPS tomorrow is definitely going to stick out. I mean, I think they have their finger on the pulse. I mean, a lot of UPS's problems and pros of UPS specific, but they'll give you a pretty good tell as to what's going on. So definitely that. PepsiCo, in terms of not necessarily the consumer, but are they able to continue to pass those costs on to the consumer? My sense is no, which theoretically should hurt their margins. We'll see. I mean, IBM is its own story. We've talked about IBM for a while. I think they finally have figured it out and it's manifesting itself in the stock price. They're back to a stock that or a company that seemingly gets it. They seemingly have a bit of an AI story. They definitely have a recurring revenue stream. Boeing is its own animal. You know, I can't say that Boeing is a bit of a tell. But Caterpillar, to me, out of all these names, you know, let's see what Caterpillar says. Because obviously, that's a stock that's had a pretty significant run. Very economically sensitive. I'll be watching that. The energy space, you know what I think about that. We get Valero, I think, on Thursday. And then two out of three of the bigger ones on Friday. I watch that just curious as to how the market interprets it. But again, to answer your question specifically, PepsiCo for sure, just in terms of if they're able to pass their costs on, UPS and Caterpillar in terms of the economic backdrop.
Yeah, I like what you're keying on with the PepsiCo. I throw kind of Chipotle in there too, is just kind of get a sense, you know, some of the kind of takeaways from the bank earnings and some of, you know, some stuff that American Express said is that, you know, they're seeing a slight softening in some areas of consumer spending. So let's just see, you know, the ability to pass through these sorts of costs and if the consumer's taking them. So to me, I think there could be some surprises. I'm definitely interested to hear about Caterpillar. You hear about all this infrastructure stuff. And then, you know, the Alpha, I think there's a lot of stories. Like you said, there's Alphabet, there's Meta. I mean, a lot of them could be explained away. Like Tesla right now, to me, nothing they have to say will be a reflection on the broader auto industry. You know what I'm saying? Like it's just very company specific right now. And the stock reaction will be a function of the stock selling off dramatically versus how bad the forward guidance is. So for this stock that's like literally gone from 200 to 140, it feels like a straight line, right? If you just want to look at this thing, you know, when it broke that sort of level about a month and a half ago, I mean, you see that there was a consolidation, but then we just dropped $50 or so. I mean, this company, like, could the stock rally if they basically give guidance? That's, you know, of course it could. You know what I mean? We'll spend some more time on that tomorrow. I think Carter's going to be with us, so we'll take a look at the technicals. But we've been saying for like probably 2 years that this is one of the worst charts in the entire stock market. And for some reason, the lower it goes, the more fervent people get about the story. But what's clear is that they are mis-executing, and they are getting the timing of this kind of, you know, move towards EV really wrong with some of their moves. And the stock market is reflecting that.
Well, I mean, think about it. It's probably somewhere between 65 and 70%. And I'll say that again, 65 and 70% off its prior all-time high, yeah, which is staggering if you think about it, you know, against the backdrop of a market that's done until the last couple of weeks extraordinarily well. So obviously, it's a Tesla-specific problem. And, you know, you mentioned deliveries and stuff, and you're right to mention that. I'll come back to margins, because the market gave them a huge benefit of the doubt, you know, a year and a half or so ago, when they basically told us that, okay, you know, that was it. Those were trough margins, and the market got ahead of that. As the market has sniffed out or sort of figured out that that was not trough margins, as a matter of fact, they're probably going the wrong way, that's when you've seen the subsequent move to the downside. So I'm curious as to see what they have to say on the margin front, because one of the pillars of the story when things were going higher was their robust margins. That's not there anymore. And that's layered on a bunch of other stuff, you know, sort of on the negative end as well. So we'll see.
Yeah, I mean,
I think it's a bad press here,
yeah,
but I think rallies are going to be sold. How's that?
Yeah. And to your point, I mean, every rally over the last year and a half has been sold. Just look at those kind of series of lower highs, right? And lower lows. And I think that's a great point. And the other point is if, like, you're trying to get excited about a margin trough and a recovery, well, the company keeps lowering prices. So when you keep lowering prices on the actual cars, right, it's really hard to make up any ground other than in volume, right? But then the other thing is this high margin full self-driving, right? This is just software, right? They keep cutting the price on that too, right? So, like, to me, I think the margins could be really bad. And if I was them, with the way the stock's acting, with the sentiment so poor, I'd maybe kitchen sink guy the rest of the year. You know what I'm saying? I'd come out, I'd be as honest as they can with a downbeat, you know what I mean, sort of slant, and just let there be a little bit of a bloodletting. The stock's going to 100. That's those January 2023 lows. Let it get really oversold. Reset the thing so you can start beating, you know what I mean, on a quarterly basis.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen. I don't think you think that's going to happen either. What I will mention, and we'll move on from Tesla, is the fact that if you recall, when yields were, you know, somewhere between where we are now and 5%, Elon Musk came out and made a point of saying how high interest rates were a problem. And then obviously a lot of things went in their favor. 10-year yields went from 5% to 3.8%, but here we are again. So that didn't magically go away either. So higher interest rates obviously creates a huge headwind for them as well. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, and on the interest rate front, this was interesting. This is from Lisa Abramowitz over there at Bloomberg Guy. And I know this kind of caught your eye here. Lisa writes, yields on the 10-year treasuries have been above the S&P 500 earnings yield for three straight weeks. This is the first time we're seeing this since 2002. This is a quote from Jones Trading, Michael O'Rourke here. All right, so, you know, Rosie's highlighted this. Our good friend Doug Cass has highlighted this, right? When you have this sort of setup here, you know, it kind of makes for a difficult stock picking environment, doesn't it? I mean, like, isn't that the whole idea? Like, higher rates make stocks less attractive when the risk-free rate right now is somewhere in the 4.5% range or so.
Theoretically, I mean, I agree with that 100%. I mean, it should. And that's why we've been trying to outline the fact that, you know, yields rising for the reasons that they're rising, forgetting about the fact that yields higher in and amongst themselves are sort of, again, a headwind for equities. People should be concerned because, again, if yields were rising because you have some robust growth in the United States and, you know, you have this robust global economy and everything is on sort of terra firma, then we'd have a different conversation. That's not what's happening. Again, in my opinion, I should say, that's not what's happening here. Yields are going higher for the wrong reasons. And I think finally, the market is starting to catch wind of that. And it's interesting to sort of see this as a visual for the first time in 22 years. You know, we've seen a lot of those sort of platitudes, first time for Japan in 17 years in terms of rates, the highest the Nikkei has been in 30 years. I mean, on and on and on in terms of these levels that we haven't seen in many years. This is another one of them. And, you know, listen, it's not the reason to sell stocks, but it is a reason you should take into consideration for sure.
Well, I guess the other point, we highlighted this with some of those consumer products companies, is that, you know, again, like, inflation was good for them when they were able to raise prices and pass it through. But at some point, if they can't pass through those price increases, it's going to weigh on their margins, right? And so when I look at, you know, a stat like this, and you just said that, you know, rates are going up for the wrong reasons. Well, I'm not so sure about that. I mean, like, we're going to get a Q1 GDP print, right, on Thursday, I think, or maybe tomorrow or Thursday. We're going to have PCE on Friday morning. I mean, you know, when you think about when the stock market, when the S&P broke out above 4,800 in December, you know, the Fed had, at the time, they were basically suggesting we're going to have 1.4% GDP growth in the U.S. by January. Or maybe it was in February, they had already raised that assessment, you know, to 2.1%, right? So if Q1 comes in better than expected, you know, to me, you have, let's say PCE comes in a little hotter and this and that, whatever. I mean, rates should be going up. I know you believe that, you know what I'm saying? And if the economy is okay, it doesn't mean that stocks are something that you want to be buying here after the run that we've had. And, you know, I think it's a good thing that a little fear was put back in investors' minds yesterday or last week.
No, it's interesting. I think historically, and you've sort of mentioned this over the years, 2.1 is probably about 2.1 is sort of the average rate of GDP. So again, it's back in line with where we are historically, but I wouldn't, and now it's a somewhat semantics, I guess, but you know, I wouldn't deem that as robust economic growth, but, you know, we can agree to disagree, but I understand your premise.
So pre-pandemic, you're 100% right. The average for the prior 10 years was like 2.2%. But here's the big difference. Yields were much lower and inflation now is at 3.1%. Inflation was under that GDP like growth level. So that's where I think you're spot on in a way. You know what I mean? But we don't. Do investors know how to price that in to stocks right now and valuations and what it means for ultimately for margins, especially with a strong dollar, a strong yield, and a strong commodity complex?
The answer is it's trying to figure it out because, you know, they're looking also through the lens of we haven't seen the recession everybody's been calling for forever. So there've been so many cross currents. But, you know, again, before we look at a yields chart, I think people are also trying to figure out, well, wait, you know, what is effectively going on here? You know, we haven't seen that slowdown. But the problem, of course, is, again, just my opinion, the consumers paying for higher inflation with credit. And that's manifesting itself. I think credit card debt now in this country is approaching $1.3 trillion. And of course, the interest rate on that $1.3 trillion has been going up as well. I think it's around 22% or so. So, you know, if that's, again, if that's the growth that the economists are looking for, well, they got it. But again, I want to say they got it in the wrong places. And we should take a look at yields because this is a pretty interesting chart, I think. 10-year yields, you know, you see where the 200-day moving average is. I don't know. I mean, can we go back and test it, I guess, in the form of like 4.28, 4.3 on a better than expected, a more, I guess, more friendly number on Friday? Yeah. Or, you know, if we get, God forbid, something on a geopolitical front, could that make yields go lower? Yeah. But I still think the path of least resistance is higher in 10-year yields.
Yeah. Well, I mean, listen, let's just look at the CME Fed Funds tracker here, because this is interesting. You know, again, you know, we've gone from, this was like a 50-50 sort of thing for June about a month ago, right? And that is looking very unlikely. So you have to, in the next slide, we'll kind of show what the expectations are, you know, for the balance of the year. I mean, that whole kind of, you know, soft landing, being able to drop the mic, being able to lower interest rates and the like, that's kind of going away. And I think the longer that works its way into investor psyche, guy, is the thing that I think really sets up for a proper correction at some point. And I think both of us, you know, would agree, you know, that S&P chart, the NASDAQ chart, we're looking at the futures, you know, 5-6% drop. Carter kind of outlined this last week on Market Call. You know, once you get to about a 5% drawdown from a peak, the potential for, you know, a much greater one, you know, is that much likely, right? Because now people are holding on, you know what I mean? They're like, how bad is this going to get? Some individual names that they own act much worse than the market. They start looking around, where can I raise some capital? If everyone becomes convinced that it's going to go lower, the stock market is a discounting mechanism. So what is it saying about future growth? We're heading into earnings. We don't know what, you know what I mean? Like what the forward guidance is going to be like and the visibility. And that's how you all of a sudden get, you know, some sort of move like that cascades lower a little bit. So I think it would probably be best to get a little bit of a bounce and see how, you know, some of these market leaders act. And then if you're like inclined to short stocks or lighten up a long position, that's probably a good way to do it. But it is hard to press after a move like this, guy, especially in the face of all these big earnings announcements we're going to get over the next
week. Yeah, which is why I think we're probably sort of sideways for a period of time to slightly higher before the next leg. We'll see. We should take a quick look at the dollar because I do think the dollar, specifically against the yen, but this is a U.S. dollar index, which is, again, in large part, euro-based. And here we are. Again, you can't underestimate the strength. Now, it's funny because as much as I thought you'd see a flight to quality in the form of the bond market, which didn't happen, I think to a certain extent, you're seeing that in the form of the dollar. You are seeing a flight to, again, I want to say perceived quality in the form of the dollar. So here we go. Dollar strength, a strong dollar, as you know, and people should understand, is a wrecking ball for corporate earnings. And we'll see if that manifests itself as we continue to move forward.
Yeah, I guess what's interesting about this is like this is a 1 year chart, right? And you can see where we were, you know, last year at this time, we're a bit higher. You could look at 5 or 6 months, we're probably not even at those sorts of levels again. And so when companies report earnings, you know, they're reporting year over year, right? So we always use this expression, well, they had easy comps or they had tough comps, right? And so if you're a multinational and you get a bunch of your sales from outside the US and year over year, the dollar is up 5% or something like that, that's going to be a tough comp, right? And so the higher, you know, this thing goes, getting back towards those prior highs, is going to be the lack of visibility that a lot of these companies have about their sales outside the US. And so when we get poor forward guidance that lacks visibility, then the question is, are you going to be paying a high multiple for those earnings or that guidance, or a lower multiple relative? And one of the reasons why we're always quoting our main man, John Butters from FactSet, when they put out every week where the S&P multiple is trading relative to the 5 and 10 year averages, because that's important. You know what I mean? As folks are figuring out valuations for comps and the like here. So again, you know, upward pressure on the dollar will come if we have stronger than expected GDP and stronger than expected PCE this week, guy.
Crude oil has been a story without question. Let's throw our crude oil chart up because now you can see we've had a pretty dramatic drop, but the 50-day again has crossed the 200-day and it's crossing it to the upside. And if your folks can go and sort of your eye go back to August, September of 2023, you'll see when that did happen, you see how the underlying commodity was basically right at that inflection point, and then we were off to the races. I do think that's what we're about to see again, unless this is a complete fake out in terms of the moving the 50 crossing the 200 day. So I actually think we hold here. I think we're going to sort of go sideways for the next leg higher. We'll see if that manifests itself, but this is clearly a story as well, Dan, in terms of crude.
Yeah. And so one of the things I just say on this is like you've kind of adequately, you know, kind of detailed, you know, the impact from the geopolitics, you know, things like calm down a little bit between Israel and Iran. And you get that move that we've had, you know, it was probably like 85, 86 here, you know, down to the current levels, 83 or so. Holding that 50-day, like you say, you know, I think near term, like I'd be very hard press to see that $80 level, guy, which is that 200-day moving average or so. Here's what I would do. If I was like looking to play this because of stronger economic growth, the potential for some sort of geopolitical dust up in the Middle East to kind of cause prices to go higher, I might think about, you know, buying crude futures here in and around 83 and a quarter, and maybe that first stop, guy, is 81.15 or so, that 50-day moving average. At least that's what I kind of see that. And then if you look at it, like the ultimate stop to be out of this would probably be 80 bucks or so, because then you probably have a retest of those March lows, which are somewhere in that $77 range. So again, if you're buying at 83, 80 seems like a far away stop. You probably want to make that initial stop in and around that sort of 50 day. And again, you could say, well, one headline could have it through that. Well, that's the whole idea with trading futures, right? You want to take some of these chops with really tight stops and keep trying those levels, keep probing those levels, because if you get the right move in your direction, then you keep raising that stop higher.
Agreed. And so we'll see. I mean, this is one, it just when you think you got it, this is one that the, at least the underlying commodity confounds. We'll talk about the big energy earnings later in the week, because you know a lot of those stocks, Exxon specifically, I want to say it made an all-time high last week. It's pulled back a bit. Let's take a look at the name. You know, we go on the Instagram each day. Lockheed Martin is a name that I've been looking at. It's the L in my clam, and they report this week, as we mentioned earlier. I don't think you can ignore defense stocks here. And, you know, Lockheed Martin is a wonderful company for a myriad of reasons. And in terms of valuation, one that I think you can actually make a pretty compelling case for. So, you know, this continues to be on my personal radar screen. I'm fascinated to see how the market reacts to the earnings release.
Yeah, no, it's a, definitely an interesting setup here. Again, when you have times where, you know, like we just had a $95 billion aid package to Ukraine, to Israel, and to Taiwan, right? And a lot of that we know is for defense spending, and we know who the beneficiaries of that are. So definitely an interesting one to keep on your radar. And again, this is a group, this is a name that could buck the broader market trend, right? Like give it all those other things. All right, last thing, Guy, before we get out of here, this Bitcoin halving, this is when the block rewards for mining a block of Bitcoin, they get cut in half. This happens every so often. You see that huge spike that we saw. That was really into the spot Bitcoin ETF approvals that we saw earlier in the year. And it might have been those exact spot Bitcoin ETFs by some huge financial services companies, right, buying the spot. You've seen that consolidation. You saw the sell-off that we had last week. It was pretty sharp. And we found a little ground here. Again, these are things that sometimes are kind of hard to keep trading the momentum when we know that it's pretty well telegraphed, Guy. You know what I mean? So this is one where I thought that 60,000 breach was interesting. And I thought maybe we'd see a bit more to that consolidation, that flag that we saw, I think it was in late February, you know what I mean, at the new 52-week highs, but we didn't. So let's see how this thing trades.
Yeah, quickly. I mean, I still think there's a leg lower here in Bitcoin. I have, you know, you've forgotten more about it than I'll ever know, but it just looking at this, you know, there's a lot of euphoria there. And I think it also showed its hand when sort of the shit hit the fan in a pretty meaningful way over the last week and a half. Bitcoin did not really acquit itself all that well. And I think that's sort of a prelude to a lot of things we're going to see. By the way, a prelude to where we're going to be next week. Look at this full screen we got. We're going to be in Florida next week. We're leaving Monday night after the show. We're going to be at the FactSet Focus Conference in Miami. We'll be there Tuesday, Wednesday, leaving on Thursday. So we leave Monday night, we come back Thursday morning. But we'll be doing Market Call from FactSet's Focus Conference.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I mean, I'm excited to get down there, Guy Adami. You and I are going to be in front of a big audience. Another thing, I'm about to go record a preview of big tech earnings with my friend Gene Munster. And Gene is, you know, he's a guy, well, listen, he tells it like it is. He's out there talking a lot about a lot of these big names. You know, he joins us on Fast Money a lot. He joins me every quarter on the OK Computer podcast. So go find that in your podcast stores. We're going to have that preview out early. It's going to be tomorrow. We're going to hit Tesla. We're going to hit Apple. We're going to hit Amazon. We're going to hit Meta, maybe a few other names. Microsoft will obviously be in there too. So check that out tomorrow. It'll be in the podcast stores, a little Q1 earnings period, our preview guy. But I'm actually most focused on Q2 guidance and what a lot of these companies have to say just about China's impact and some of the issues that you know we're having with you know really supply of these generative AI chips, which it just seems like there's no shortage of enthusiasm for companies that are talking up their Gen AI products. So we're going to hit all that with Gene.
Perfect time to have him, without question. So the timing is right. Our time is come to a close today. Knicks play tonight. Dan Nathan will be in attendance. So if you see him, be sure to say hi. Knicks Sixers game two. I do believe the Yankees are playing now, believe it or not, for some odd reason. But we'll be back tomorrow. So thanks for joining us, and we'll see you later, folks.
See ya. Thanks.